First of all, my title of my talk I did change, and it is there an energy crisis? Okay, absolutely addressing what you want to, questions you want to answer. First thing to say is we have stacks of energy in the Earth's crust, absolutely stacks of it. There's no problem about the quantity of energy that we have. The difficulty is actually getting it out of there and in a cheap way. But man's is forever inventive. I mean, shale gas has come along in the last 15 years. That now supplies a lot of America, and that's got out to be very cheap. Right. Now, the trouble with all this fossil fuel is when you burn it, you produce carbon dioxide. I'm the first person, I think, to mention carbon dioxide tonight, would you believe? Carbon dioxide goes into the atmosphere, and the climate modellers know roughly, or pretty well, what that does in terms of increasing the heat flux to planet Earth. What they don't know is what the other side effects of that may be. And this is a very difficult problem. I mean, how does the increased heat flux into planet Earth affect cloud formation? That's still not well understood. All the aerosols that are in the atmosphere now, we don't really understand how those are affecting things. So this is the temperatures which we anticipate. Everyone now knows that we're going to up to about 650 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air. That will give us a temperature rise of about 4 degrees. If we go up to 1,000 parts per million, it's even worse. It's of course, and that's perfectly possible. Many people think we'll go there. It just depends on how the world develops. And we will get 6 degrees. They are the most probable temperatures. If you look at those graphs, the curves there, this shows you the other temperatures. There is a finite probability, I mean some, maybe a few percent probability, temperatures will reach over 11 degrees centigrade in your lifetime, or certainly your children's lifetime. That's scary. We all want to avoid that scenario, don't we? This is why we're essentially why we're here today. What everyone is talking about, clean, renewable energy, how we use energy more cleverly. This whole question of climate change is much too risky to ignore, for sure. We can't be certain about it. It could be fairly benign. It could be very bad indeed. So let's save energy. You would think that's what we've been talking about. Well, I have worries about saving energy, or at least Mr. Chevron did at the end of the 19th century. If you tend to improve the way you use energy, you increase energy efficiency, there's a tendency to increase demand. You almost don't believe that. But if you just like, imagine insulating your home. Insulation's been paid for, you've got £500 extra in your wage packet. What do? You have a weekend in Barcelona. You actually produce more carbon dioxide than what you save by having the insulation. That's a fact, and I believe that is going on around the world. And this is why we're not seeing any significant reductions in CO2 emissions. So, efficiency gains really, I think, just displace energy usage. And so I think you tackle that with exceedingly caution. What do we need all this energy for? Well, one, to give us the lovely lifestyle that we all enjoy. We all want our homes heated in the winter, cool in the summer, our children well fed, gorgeous food, lovely house, lots of interesting things to do, lots of holidays. That's what anyone wants in the world. And they also, those people are prepared to pay for the increases in prices of energy, which comes with that. As you clean up energy, so it gets more costly. Those people are very happy cleaning the energy. Other people, the pensioner in Bradford, really finds it very difficult to meet those increased energy costs. She actually gets very cold, and there's a number of deaths courtesy of that. We all want to look after the future generation, your children's, your grandchildren, etc. You're there. One of the reasons why we're doing this is to keep planet Earth in a safe mode. More importantly, and people who exist now, and people that everyone's referred to in the developing countries who don't have any power in their homes, but they're very ambitious. They're doing their homework under the streetlight. They want exactly what we want. The people with the small penises, well, they never be seen dead in a car like that, the Renault Giblet. But that problem, can easily be solved if we present that. That's an electric car, goes at nearly 200 miles an hour, a 400 mile range. No problem. Jeremy Clarkson is not the problem. That's one of the answers. He's not a problem at all. This is a problem. This is a picture. This is a train carrying 100 wagons full of coal. It wasn't taken at the end of the 19th century. It was taken last year in China. China, of course, are using all their coal. They've got lots and lots of coal, and they want power. And it's the cheapest way to get it at the moment. So, with all this, what energy systems do we have available to us? We have coal, of course. China's building lots of coal stations. Germany's now building lots of coal stations. Lots of countries are still building lots of coal power stations. They emit enormous quantities of carbon dioxide. At the moment, there's no way we can handle that carbon dioxide. There's research programs going across the world trying to see if we can store it, capture it, then store it, or capture it, then use it. That's even better. If you could do that, that'd be wonderful. But tough to do. So quite a question mark over that particular energy system. Gas, been mentioned a lot these days, much cleaner than coal, cheap also, but again, you've got the carbon dioxide, which still remains a problem. So a little question mark over that. Nuclear power. All sorts of developments are taking place in the nuclear power industry. Possibilities of producing a power without this horrible waste that people don't like so much. There's a possibility of using thorium, which would give us nuclear power for feed the whole world for 100 or 2 years. But it's very expensive, and that's one of the big problems of it. That essentially, the installations being installed in the UK at the moment are being subsidised by the government. And since they promise an electrical price, a price of electricity that's produced when they eventually get up and running. So a bit of a question mark over there. Wind. A lot's been said about wind. I have enormous problems with wind, I have to say. That's a 5 megawatt wind turbine that's being trialled in the North Sea. Very expensive. Indeed, it's probably 3 times more expensive. The power coming from that wind turbine is 3 times more expensive than what you get from gas. The only reason that's going ahead is the government is subsidising it, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to use public money to do that. You've got to develop the technology. But I'm very suspicious about whether that will ever deliver the power, any significant amounts of power, useful power for this country. Very suspicious indeed. Even the government's Climate Change Committee said, hold back. We don't know about this technology. Will it survive the 25 years? It really has to before it starts delivering anything. So for me, a big question mark over that. Solar panels in Merry England, producing power, very nice. Average sunshine in Merry England is 2.7 hours per day. That takes about 60 years to get back the energy that's embedded in that solar panel. Total waste of time. No question. Anyone who puts solar panels on that, you are damaging planet Earth. You're not helping it. Say, almost unbelievable, but it's true. The problem is, I mean, how do we move forward from all of this? And this is going to be controversial. I think we're fixated on carbon emission reduction targets. These targets is not a good target culture, this particular one. It really, half the world is not engaged in reducing them anyway. There's a whole problem of there's no immediate return. When you achieve something, you can't see it. There's no tangible way except from people monitoring CO2 emissions. It's not on the human timescale. It's not a good target culture. It's not a good culture to indulge in. And critically, it persuades governments to take precipitate actions to install untested energy systems in order to meet CO2 emission reduction targets. It is not the right target, we believe. And we question this. We think it's the wrong target. We think a better one is to focus on production of clean energy. Lots of it, clean, low cost, deployable, obviously available 24/7. A much better target to do. This is what will really produce, really get CO2 emission down. It's a tough one to do for sure, but I think this is also a much more ethical approach because the whole emission target reduction really means you've got to get these things down, otherwise you're penalised and then people at the low end are unable to afford the power that's produced. So, with all this sort of misery about, how do we move forward? It's fusion. Fusion, of course, is the answer. I wish that Tony Arbour, sitting over there, could say this is a realistic proposal in the next 40 years, but I doubt whether he can. No, we must handle fusion remotely. I'm, of course, talking about solar energy. And this is a solar energy not coming from the heartlands of Surrey. It's coming from solar power systems positioned in the sunbelt regions of the planet, mostly in desert regions. In 2 hours, energy falls on the desert regions that could power the world for a year. And here's the possibilities. They need to be produced there. They need to be distributed, ferried up. 90% of us live within 3,000 kilometres of a desert. And so it's a big job for National Grid to get high voltage DC to ferry up to where we live. And the critical thing, it doesn't matter whether there's stacks of it, absolutely stacks of it, it can be done cheaply. That's the big that. This is not my analysis. It's analysis by an institute called Desert Tech, founded by Germans, and they're operating in the Sahara Desert. This is the future, absolutely the future. And this is where governments all around the world should be thinking of directing resources. And that's the sort of areas, that's where we put the boxes. Oh my God, they've moved. All those little red boxes were in desert regions around there. to scale. There's six of them, 3 terawatts apiece, enough to feed planet Earth. That's based on a very conservative estimate of the efficiency of solar energy. One final thing, what about if it all goes wrong? It all goes belly up. Temperatures don't stabilise at 4 degrees centigrade. We go through a tipping point, for example. The Arctic ice starts melting, etc. You are in queer street, and we are not prepared for that. And what you have to do under those circumstances is protect the polar regions. So I think that geoengineering has to be seriously thought about before we can really lay in our beds quietly. And solar geoengineering, dream particles, as we call them, you position over the desert regions. Absolutely safe, affordable, can be done. Very important to bring this whole work into the centre ground. Finally, there we are, can't ignore the unthinkable. And because people do. And finally, there's the question, is there an energy crisis? That is not the right question. A much better question is, what is the programme for rolling out clean energy across the world? That's a much, much better question. And then we do have a crisis. It's a crisis in energy policy. And until that is sorted, I don't hold out much hope. Thanks very much.